think, Alec, we're going to have a discussion before the Biz News in Hermanus. We're going to have to discuss the scheduling, because when I spoke at the Biz News a few months ago in Hermanus at the March one, I was speaking at the same time as Ian Cameron. And I'd looked on the Biz News YouTube views just beforehand. I was speaking at the same time in a second session, and Ian Cameron had 97,000 views and I'd had 2,000. So I felt like I was Willie Nelson with a banjo next to Taylor Swift. And now I've got to speak after Gigi and Warren with those inspiring stories. And I'm going to talk about PE ratios. So I'll try and keep it interesting, but thank you so much, Alec. It's a joy to be here. I flew back from South Africa this morning, and us value investors sit in the back of the bus, which I thought was a really good idea until I didn't check in on time. And so I was in the middle seat close to the toilets, which were being flushed every 5 minutes, and a screaming baby. So when I got off the plane this morning, I thought that was a value trap. So a few coffees later and we're here. Okay, so I've got two parts to the talk. The first is I want to talk about, you know, where there's some opportunities investment-wise. And I'll come at it from a different angle. And then second thing I want to talk about is investing in turnarounds. Okay, and not just and take what I've learned from investing in turnaround listed turnarounds and maybe apply it to South Africa and throw some ideas out there. Almost, you remember the tips for Trevor and which I loved. That was a brilliant idea. Everybody actually, because then you're harnessing the intellectual wisdom of, you know, the entire country. Well, maybe we can harness the intellectual wisdom of the Biz News community, and when we have the election, we can present this. These are some ideas that we think are good. And worthwhile going through. But the first thing I want to talk about is pendulums and wrecking balls. So here's a quote from Seth Klarman. He's a billionaire investor. He founded the Baupost Group. He said, "The whole reason our capitalist system works the way it does is because there are cycles and the cycles self-correct." And that is just economics. As soon as the pendulum swings too far one way, okay, we're going to see this now. We're seeing lots of listings. The AI frenzy's out there. What happens? SoftBank lists Arm. You know, you're going to start to see, I think, many of the AI companies listing. And I was quite excited to hear today of a business that is making higher net profit margins than NVIDIA. And that is Gigi's toilet roll lady in I don't know where Soweto or whatever. But that's quite those astounding margins. I mean, I think we need to list them. That's what we need to do. Right. So let's take a step back. This is October 2007, and what you've got here are regions. So that's the MSCI Europe and MSCI North America. And pretend you're an IFA. You're sitting down with your clients, and this is the five-year historic return. And you can see that over the 5 years, Europe has done 160%, and North America has done just over 80%. And trust me when I tell you that the 3 years, the 5 years, the 1 year, it was just Europe all the way, okay? But it just made for a messy slide. And now you sit down and you say, where do you think we should invest? Your clients are going to say, Europe, obviously. You know, there were all sorts of reasons why Europe was the place to be and America wasn't. Now let's roll forward 5 years, 2012. Unfortunately, if you invested in Europe, you are down. I better put my glasses on here, some 40%. You've had a wrecking ball hit your portfolio. If you'd invested in the laggard, okay, North America, you're actually only down 10%. Okay, so that was playing the pendulum versus going for the previous winner. Let's look at style. If you'd been March 2000, growth had trumped value, up 160% or so, value up just under 90%. Okay, you're still up 90%, but of course everybody wants the previous winner. Let's roll forward 5 years. Growth is down nearly 40%. Pendulum's wrecked your portfolio, whereas value is actually up a little bit. Okay, playing the pendulum. So just going for the historic winner is not always the answer. What about size? This is January 2000. You can see there, large versus small. Small, you're still up, but everybody wants to be in the winner. Let's go with large. Well, 5 years later, you're down nearly 25%. And small, you're actually up 50%. Okay, the complete opposite. The pendulum has swung. It swung too far. All the people who've sold the small caps, given up on small caps, the sellers are done. Just a little whiff of good news, and all of a sudden the small caps come back. Emerging markets and developed, and this is where it gets really interesting. So in 2011, emerging markets were up nearly 45%. The world index over the previous 5 years had done nothing. What happened? Everybody launched emerging market funds. Roll forward 5 years, okay, emerging markets down nearly 30%. And what is the MSCI World Index done? Up nearly 20. Okay, so just because you can't look at history and just go with what has been the winner. Where are we today? North America has smashed Europe. All right. Growth has smashed value. Large has smashed small. And developed has smashed emerging markets. Okay? And let's put all those together. So what I did here is I took a North American growth index, and that's up over 120%, and I took the world index, so the all-country world index, excluding the US, small and mid-cap, and value, okay? And what's the difference? 108%. How many people look at their portfolios of the funds? If you go and look at the fact sheets of your funds invested, what do you think you will be mostly invested in? Chances are you'll be mostly invested in North America large cap growth. You'll just, your portfolio will be littered with full of Microsofts and Googles and Amazons, et cetera, and won't have many of the others. So the risk is, okay, what are you risking? Are you risking a wrecking ball, or are you risking a pendulum? And let's look at some valuations. So this is a quote I came up with. Yeah, use a rearview mirror if you want to go backwards. Okay, doesn't always, the historic winners are not always the winners going forward. And if we look at some valuations, you can see this is enterprise value. So this brings into account the balance sheet, the debt, or the cash. And you can see that for large cap North American growth, you're up over 22 times earnings. Whereas if you look at the small and mid in the world index, you're looking at 10, which is similar. So they're great opportunities. They're just not in North America, we don't think. Okay. And, you know, are those great businesses? They're great businesses. But it's like buying, you know, a Bantry Bay apartment's an amazing apartment. Is it a good investment at 500 million rand? No. Okay. And that's what we're saying. Great businesses, too expensive. The question is not whether they're great businesses or not. You know, the question is whether they're great investment opportunities. So that is where we're finding opportunities. And it's no surprise that we have 81% of our portfolio outside North America. And of course, in investing terms, you've always got to go where the puck is going to be. It's that Wayne Gretzky thing. Go where the puck is going to be. If you like football, you think of Haaland. They don't pass the ball to Haaland. They pass it in front of Haaland. He races up and scores. And so you've got to pass the ball to where the person's going to be. Where's the investment? Where's the puck going to move? It's going to be moving surely at some point to Europe, Asia, and emerging markets. You just need a couple of large sovereign wealth funds, massive family offices, hedge funds. In fact, it's even happening now to say it's time to take a few chips off the table to go from 70% maybe to 65%, take that 7% off the table and move it to Europe. And what's going to happen? It's going to move the prices. And here's why. Europe is far less liquid, and Japan and Asia, in fact, the whole lot, far less liquid than North America. So JP Morgan, by way of example, trades about $1.5 billion a day. Okay, so pretend you're a massive wealth fund and you've got a $100 million position in JP Morgan. You can sell it today, one day. Try and invest $100 million in Europe. You will move the price massively. If you try and invest $10 million in Deutsche Bank, you will move the price. So when that money moves across, it's going to push the prices. And right now, what's interesting is UK market is out of favor. UK is hitting new highs. Hong Kong market was out of favor. Hong Kong market was up last month. Most other markets were down. So you don't need a lot of money to move across for there to be sizable moves. Okay, and then the average market cap of the world index is 90 billion, massively skewed by those huge companies. Average market cap in our fund is 10 billion. Okay, so let's talk about investing in turnarounds. This is the second part, and this is maybe where it can get interesting. And what's the first point that I'd make about investing in turnarounds? They're very high risk. Something has gone wrong. That's why the business is struggling. And now you have to correct that. And the problem is you're often having to correct that at a time when your competitors have taken advantage of the fact that you've been struggling. So they're in a stronger position. Someone said to me the other day that ShopRite spends more on IT than Pick and Pay's market cap. Okay, so Pick and Pay has to come back against a really strong competitor, and that's going to be challenging. So investing in turnarounds is high risk. And if you look at, and if you get it wrong, you can lose a lot of money. So your timing has got to be right. Now let's look at South Africa. Things have gone wrong. So what kind of things have we got to do to turn that situation around? Well, if you look at a lot of the consultants, there are a few factors that they talk about what you need for the turnaround. And the first is you need a change in a leadership team. The people who drove the business into the ground cannot be the same as you know, leading it out. It's a bit like you need different skills to make money than to keep money. Okay, entrepreneurs are very good. They're concentrated. They go for it. They're high risk. That's how they made the money. Now you've got to keep the money. Don't. That's when you've got to be conservative. Different skill set. Okay, so we need a complete change at the top, and hopefully we're going to have that at the time of the election. The next thing is you've got to analyze the situation and say, is it viable? So let's just stand back here. What is South Africa rich in? Well, we're rich in resources. Okay, I mean, we're rich in energy. Think about the gold price at the moment. We've got all these the huge gold reefs and platinum reefs, and we've got sun and we've got wind. We're rich in sport and culture, you know. We have huge entrepreneurial spirits. I think there are 13 billionaires currently who were born in South Africa. And if you think about it, I mean, Elon Musk born in South Africa, and we've got luxury goods, finance, retail, beverages, you know, across the spectrum. We're out there, we can punch above our weight internationally. And as a nation, we've had to, because you haven't had a support system in terms of the government out there. And we listen to all these inspiring stories about these entrepreneurs and just how they've seen a gap and gone for it. You know, it's amazing. I was talking to Gigi about that payback period, and I said that it's the next best payback period I've ever come across. Okay, is the back room. And I was talking to one of our guys. We've got two guys who work for us in Johannesburg, and they were telling me about the payback period. And the best payback period I've ever had is Clippers. Because I paid £35 for my clippers and I got my money back after two haircuts that I didn't have to do. So that's a PE of even less than one. But entrepreneurial spirit the country is not short of, and we've seen that with the inspiring stories from Warren and Gigi. Okay, what are we poor in? We're poor in governance, we're poor in crime, and we're poor in time. You know, in turnaround situations, it's a race against the clock. You've got lots of debt and there's a race against the clock. So how do we do this? And so now this is when I've thrown a couple of ideas out. Okay, and some people are going to say, you're turkey voting for Christmas. And UK has got form in that regard. We voted for Brexit. But not all these ideas are going to be liked. Okay, I'm just trying to hopefully spark some debate. And then we can try and come up with a list that maybe we can present to the government. That's the idea. So let's just go through some of these ideas that I've got. Okay, the key thing is, in South Africa, you want to be safe in your home, and you want to be safe in your on the roads. And so I'd say, well, what about tax deduction for private security? If we've got corruption in the police force, okay, then let's create jobs with private security and go for it. Now, you know, we pretty much have private security anyway, but that'll just reduce the influence of the police. Maybe that's an idea. But safety on the roads, I feel quite strongly about. Here in the UK, we have you'll all be familiar with this. If your car's older than 3 years, you have to have an annual roadworthy. And I tell you, I don't drive 5 minutes down the road in South Africa, and I think that car should not be on the roads. And if we did that, that would actually create lots of jobs, because, you know, you got the repair shops. And interestingly, chatting in Johannesburg, there's a whole new industry. And Gigi can corroborate this, with the Uber Eats on the scooters. So now they've got scooter repair shops in the townships fixing all of those things. Okay, so this would create huge amount of – it would make our roads safer, and it would create jobs. And, you know, so I think that's something we should look at. And I want to just – sorry, I should have taken a step back. When I was at Alan Gray, in fact, it might have been subsequent to Alan Gray, they've got an economist. I was at Orbis, sorry, not Alan Gray, but they had an economist at Alan Gray, still have, Sandy McGregor. He's a brilliant man, very smart, and he wrote an excellent paper a long time ago. I probably learned more about economics from Sandy than anybody else. And his point was that if you lower costs, you spur economic growth. And the reason you do that is because you lower costs, what happens is you have more money in your pocket. So let's just think about this. Let's say petrol price goes down. You now have more money in your pocket. What do? You go to restaurants. When you spend at the restaurants, the waiter gets some money. The restaurant owner gets the money. They buy stuff from the wholesaler, and you get the multiplier effect. So lowering costs increases the multiplier effect. Okay, and so what we want to try and do is lower costs in many ways. And so hopefully some of those ideas will come through here. grant foreigner access to capital. It's really difficult for foreigners to get access to capital in South Africa. And I know that because we've got a guy who works for us, and he wants to buy a house, but he can't buy a house. Okay. And the next thing was visas for foreign spouses. I mean, it is just ridiculous, the stories I hear. I've got a wife who's in the medical profession, and she's got colleagues who have partners who couldn't get visas in South Africa. And you go, but these visas, you know, if you gave these foreign spouses visas, all of a sudden they'd be buying houses, they'd be employing workers and domestic workers and gardeners, would be going out to the fancy restaurants, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So not only are you not encouraging them, you're actually chasing the person away with their spouse to go and live somewhere else. And I think we should have foreign visas for retirees. Great place. You know, the Brits can no longer go to Spain and retire like they could, but pre-Brexit. Go out to Cape Town, and here's the thing, or to Durban or the South Coast or wherever. If you go there and you're a retiree, well, you're going to spend a few years going out to the restaurants and traveling around, and then you're going to be less and less able, and so you're going to need carers, there's job creation. Then you're going to need medical treatment, that's job creation for the doctors and the nurses, etc. So a simple thing, their families are going to come and visit them from abroad, it's nice weather, etc. I think there should be no marketable securities tax for businesses with low market cap. They do this in France. So you know that if you go and you buy a share in the JSE, you will pay marketable securities tax. Over here, you pay 0.5%. I think it's 25 basis points in South Africa. In France, for smaller market caps, smaller companies, no MST. So that encourages businesses to get out there. It encourages liquidity, etc. And I think they should change the basic fuel price levy. So Sasol produces, I think I'm right in saying, about 150,000 barrels of oil a day, where they take coal and they convert it to gas, and then they take that gas and convert it to liquids. Okay, it's one of the most energy-intensive processes out there. Sasol is one of the worst polluters and greenhouse gases in the world, and they only produce 150,000, and South Africa imports about 80%. Now, the fuel price, if you have a look, go and have a look at the fuel price levy, the determined fuel price includes things like notional, so it includes Dubai refining margins, notional cost of shipping, notional cost of insurance, notional cost of storage. These are costs that Sasol is not having to pay. Us, or the people in South Africa, when you're buying the fuel, you're paying that cost that is not being borne. Okay, if you change that, made it competitive, what is that doing? Lowering costs. And we know that the poor spend a lot of money on fuel because of historic reasons with apartheid traveling further from home. So let's help some lower costs. Yeah, I mean, if I were running the show, I'd probably, and also Sasol is one of the largest users of energy in South Africa. So what happens? We're using the electricity to do this refining. So now everybody's buying generators, which needs diesel, which means more refining. Okay, so, and what does that mean? Well, that means the electricity price has gone up. If we could lower the electricity prices, lower costs, drive that multiplier effect. So that's another idea. I think they should abolish the state duty. I think they should do that here as well. And, you know, if capital gains tax is paid within 2 years, I was having a look, estate duty, well, they don't separate estate duty. They talk about property tax in SARS's data, and it's about 1% of the revenue collected is from property tax, most of which is marketable securities tax. Okay, so estate duty is tiny. And why is it tiny? Because the rich people are going to get out of there. You know, they're mobile. They can take their wealth elsewhere. They can go to Namibia where there's no capital gains tax, go to Mauritius, etc. Many places in the world. So it's a complete red herring. And I think it should be abolished. And I think it should be they should abolish donations tax as well. So what you do is, if you're close to you're getting old, you then want to give money away. Well, they say, well, that's, you know, if you died with that, you'd pay estate duty. So now what you got to do is pay donations tax. But if you give wealthy people opportunity to give money to their children, who then buy houses, who then buy motor cars and stimulate the economy, actually, what's wrong with that? So, I mean, the mere fact is that rich people won't pay this tax anyway. They will go and live elsewhere. And interestingly, if you look at Italy these days, you can go to Italy and pay 100,000 euros for 5 years, and that's the tax, okay? And they're encouraging the wealthy people. And what's happening? They're going there, they're going out to the fancy restaurants, they're buying the luxury handbags, they're driving around in Ferraris, but they've paid 100,000 and all that other stuff. So they should actually turn South Africa into tax haven. Beautiful weather. Why not? Do it. And I think they should increase capital gains tax. Now, this is Turkey voting for Christmas, okay? But if I was in South Africa with lots of assets, your current marginal capital gains tax rate is 18%. And I think people should focus on the 82% they get to keep rather than the 18% they get to pay. But in Europe, in Norway, it's nearly 40%. In France, I think it's 33%. Most European countries are in the 30s. And what I would encourage them to do is say, well, here's the plan. It's going to be 25% next year, 35% the following year, 30%, 35%. And what will people then do? They will then take that money. They will crystallize the gains now to save future tax. When they crystallize the gains, that will help the balance sheet. And South Africa could do that. And they can then take money and invest in, rather than being in some lazy balanced fund, can invest in other interesting funds out there and help stimulate the South African economy. And what I also think might work with that is, at the moment, you can only have charitable donations up to 10% of your taxable income. Well, why don't you increase that? Let's put more money in the hands of charities who are doing work and good stuff right now. And so you can, up to 50% of your capital gains tax, you can reduce that if you donate money to registered charities. And that'll get money in the hands of people who are doing amazing stuff in South Africa right now. So remove cash from the system. I was intrigued to hear about Gigi, and I think that's a great thing. In Greece, what's happened, one of the reasons, I don't know if you'll recall, in 2011, Greece was on its knees. Now it's a powerhouse. All the banks are flying and the economy is booming. And one of the reasons they've been booming is that COVID meant they still had to go cashless. And that increased the tax take in Greece, and that's helped the economy. And now you cannot pay anything more than 500 euros in cash. It has to be in a card or electronic, and that means it can be captured. So their tax take has been going up, and let's share the load. Why are these, the person who's doing the amazing stuff with the toilet rolls and all the rest, why is that escaping? And the back rooms, they should all be paying their share. Let's bring the tax down for everybody and all share the load is what I would suggest. And I think you have revenue tax on high energy users. There are a couple of historic cases of aluminium smelters and ferrochrome producers, those kind of guys who use a huge percentage of South Africa's energy. And we can't change those rules. I'd give it a go. But if you can't change those rules, then have a revenue tax on those guys to try and encourage them to use more efficient energy systems. So those are some of the ideas. There were a couple of others. I just wanted to see whether I missed those out. But those are some ideas that I thought just shoot from the hip. I'm not an economist. When we look at businesses that we think are turnarounds, we say, what would we do? If we ran this business, would we buy back stock, close that division, pay off that expensive debt, et cetera, et cetera. And I think those are some of the ideas that I would then get an army of economists to run with and go with that. Okay.